You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Hello and welcome to Money Control Podcast. I'm Santosh Nair and my guest today is Ramesh Damani, a well-known name and face to all those who track the stock market. Besides being a value investor, Mr. Damani is also chairman and independent director on the board of Avenue Supermarts, which owns the retail chain DMart. In the midst of all this, Mr. Damani also found time to host the television show Wizards of Dalal Street, in which he interviewed some of the top money managers in the country.
This is a Money Control Podcast special, in conversation with Ramesh Damani.
Mr. Damani, thanks for joining us on this podcast. A pleasure to have you here.
Hi, Santosh. Thank you so much for coming to my office. It's a great pleasure to be on your first podcast.
Thanks. So tell us, how did you end up in the stock market? Was it a planned career move to be here?
It wasn't actually. I was like many of my generation. When I graduated in the 70s sometime, I'm that old, of course. A lot of us used to go to the West for better education, better opportunities. Because India was still, you remember, a fairly closed economy. So like a lot of my brethren at that time, I went abroad, I studied, got my bachelor's and master's abroad. And then I started working in the technology industry. In many ways, I was the vanguard of the Indian move into US technology. But sometime in the late 80s, I was also the only son of my small family. So there's enormous pressure to come back to India. And there's also a feeling that my father articulated quite well. He said that India was on the cusp of great change. And in retrospect, of course, it was a very precise call. So he urged me to come back. And the Bombay Stock Exchange was offering memberships for about 6 lakhs. He said that was a great thing for me to go and buy. And thanks to his efforts and the efforts of Mr. Maya, who was the executive director of the Bombay Stock Exchange at that time, I managed to get a seat as a broker for 6 lakhs. And by happy coincidence, the value of that seat in 89 was 6 lakhs. In 92, it became 4 crores. So it was a good investment all the way around.
So what were the early days like?
You know, the early days, of course, were very skeptical. I mean, including people close to me in America were very skeptical about India opening up. There was a lot of skepticism from my wife's end, because she was very happy in the Californian lifestyle. And we settled to, we had a young kid at that time. But I don't know, sometimes it's the father's instinct, sometimes it's your own instinct. I always believed that the world would globalize, and, you know, after the Berlin Wall had fallen, that increasingly the economies would have to open up. I mean, there was a young man's thoughts at that time, and I just sensed an opportunity out here. So I came here. And the last year was a backwater. I think it didn't open up until, say, 95. So the first 5-6 years, while the business was good, the brokerage business itself was very good and lucrative, the last year was still considered a backwater of international finance. Today, of course, one of the leading emerging markets, part of the MSCI index. But in retrospect, those were good years to learn the business, to meet the players. And I was very fortunate in those years to meet people who had become the giants of this business 25 years later, people like R.K. Damani, as you mentioned, who founded DMart, Rakesh Jhunjhunwala, Durgesh Shah, Nimesh Shah. I was very fortunate to meet these absolutely bright bunch of individual investors who have influenced and shaped my career.
So early on, was it just broking alone, or did you used to invest also?
I started the brokerage because capital was scarce, so we needed the money to finance the brokerage part of the business. But very soon I became envious of my friends, because while I was earning 1% brokerage, they were making 100% return on the stocks they picked, you know. So at some point I realized that I wanted to, as Ramdev might say, value migrate. I wanted to move from brokerage to proprietary investing. And I think maybe we did that more seriously after, say, 93, 94, after the fall of 92, when we wanted to look back. The brokerage was good, but it wasn't great business. You could make a living, but you could never get rich of it unless you truly build scale. So I think maybe I started investing in 94. For the first 4 or 5 years, I was, pretty much being a broker.
So you just mentioned the stock market crash of 92. How did it affect you, your business?
Well, see, luckily we were not prop investing out that time, but I used that time to come up with a philosophy of how I want to invest by studying, you know, the Warren Buffetts of the market, or studying the greats in India. I think that helped me come up with a philosophy on the market. And I read very carefully that, you know, you, for example, that you don't want to buy stocks that have, you know, gone down a lot in this bear market, because, you know, they will tend to fall even more. You want to find new ideas, new leadership. So that's one of the lessons I'd learned very early on in my life. And I think those lessons really held me in good stead.
So do you recall your first major trade?
I do actually. The first one, I've done a number of the cluster of trades I did around that time, but the one I think that brought a lot of notice to me and boosted my self-confidence a lot was there was a public sector company called CMC, which was divested by the government of India at that time. And nobody knew what to do about it. And the person who owned it, GIC, was selling it at maybe, you know, 10, 15 rupees, which in effect was the market cap of the company was maybe 30, 40 crores. Which is nutty because the company, and remember, this is my background as a software engineer in California before I came to be a broker here. They had done the BSE bold trading online software. They had also done, for example, the Indian railway system. Now, I knew from my background that these are very prestigious projects and very expensive to implement. If IBM had done these projects, say, for example, the Indian railway project, they would probably charge the Indian government $100 million. And here, this whole company was available for like $5 million or something like that. So I realized that I was onto a bargain. So I remember wanting to buy, and that's one of the lessons that recurred in my life. I wanted to buy maybe 5,000, 10,000 shares of CMC because it looked like a good bet to me. And my father actually literally held my hand. He says, do you think this is worth a bigger trade? And I said, yeah, but, and he said, no, do a bigger trade for it. So as only fathers can do, he literally held my hand and made me buy a larger block of that share. And as my good fortune would have it, the stock got fire in the market. It went from 13 months after listing, it went from 20 to 800 rupees. So we had a 40x in 1 year. After that, it went up and down, but finally got merged with TCS. So it kept merging beyond that. So we did a good amount of money in that. And it brought me two important lessons in life. You know, the first was to have your own conviction, to build, you know, to understand your business that you're buying yourself. A lot of people didn't want to look at it that time because technology companies were not understood, PSUs were not understood. I managed to go through those objections. And secondly, the importance of betting big when you have a good idea. You want to back up the truck and buy. Because in a bull market, you want to be loaded on good stocks. And great ideas are very rare. So if you come up with a great idea, I mean, think about it. CMC was at 20 bucks. You know, you're getting this company for 30, 40 crores. And this company had the potential, as later we found out, to be a hugely scalable company. So I think those two lessons I learned very early in my life. The thing about CMC, which I always tell all my friends and my family, was that before CMC, no one knew me in the market. After CMC, no one could ignore me in the market. But anytime you can pick a 30, 40 bagger, that's, you know, considered pretty high up there in the market.
So they say that successful investing is as much about discipline as it, as much as it is about identifying the right kind of stock. So was there any set rules that you had been following then and still continue to do so today?
I think among the rules, I realized that this is a, you know, a business of patience. And, you know, I think very early on, I realized that if you want to really make money, you have to be investing in the business for a period of time. A lot of people bet on price. You know, they, for example, buy, you know, company X at 150 rupees, it goes to 200. They say, I'm making 30% of my money. I'm pretty happy out there. Warren Buffett does 20%, I mean 30%, I'll sell out of the stock. But experience has taught us that great businesses build great value over long periods of time. They keep compounding. They'll go to 300, then go to 500, then go to 700, then go to 1,000 out there. And particularly if you're in the early stages of bull market, the winners that you have can sometimes be up 10x, 20x, 50x by the time the bull market gets over. So it's very important to hold on to that business, you know, almost for dear life. So I learned that very early on, by not only by reading, but also by watching and also by implementing those strategies, because we kept holding the CMCs. We didn't try to make double our money or triple our money. And that would have been a great return. Suppose you triple your money. But it gave us the opportunity to make almost 100 times our money over time. So I've realized that great ideas are very rare. And if you get a good idea, you need to hold on to those great ideas and, you know, see them flower into great businesses over a period of time. So it's a lesson that is very important to learn in the market. The people always say that, oh, I'm doing everything right, I'm not making money in the market. It's because you don't understand the principles of compounding. You know, the great businesses compound over time, compounding your wealth over time. And the trick to get wealthy, Santosh, if I may say from what I feel, is you need to double your money every 3 years. That should be the kind of benchmark that we use to each other. Because if you assume you have a 30-year career in the financial markets, okay, most of us will start at 25 and retire by 55 or 60. Say you have a 30-year career in the market. If you double your money every 3 years, that in effect means that you're doing doubling your money 10 times. That in effect means that your wealth has grown 1,000 times. What do I mean by that? Suppose you start with 10 lakhs and double your money every 3 years. Over a 30-year period, that 10 lakhs becomes 100 crores. So that's a phenomenal amount of money to have. And you must remember, for a large part of my investing career, long-term capital gains were tax-free in India. So we didn't have to pay any capital gains tax. So we could compound our money very efficiently over that period of time. So, I mean, those are some of the things I would suggest investors do.
So you mentioned that, you know, you have to hold on to stocks for a long period of time. But any average duration that you keep in mind when you're taking a bet?
It's not a duration. I think that people generally mistake that if I keep something for 5 years, I make money. I mean, you could have bought stocks that have gone from 100 to 5 over 5 years. So that is obviously not the duration. The duration is to buy a great business and to stick with it. Now, great business can last various market cycles, can last a market cycle, but you kind of figure that out, that is this business like a liquor or tobacco business will outlive any market cycle, because human habits don't change. We'll always swing between, you know, wanting to go out and celebrate with friends, wanting to, you know, have a good time, or wanting to go to a favorite vice like smoking a cigarette. So those businesses outlast it. The other businesses that work well for a period of time, you know, there'll be a real estate boom, there'll be a construction boom. So you need to time those a bit more. But any great business that requires you to get out within 3 months or 6 months is a trade, is not a great business. I mean, I think investors need to understand that, that Rome wasn't built in a day, neither are great businesses. You know, they compound over periods of time to build great franchises.
Have you done any short-term trades before you started holding it for a very long period?
I have. I do it all the time. I'm sitting in front of a screen, I'm a broker, you know, the temptation to do it is very strong, but I don't do it with more than 5% of a net worth or 10% of a net worth. You know, you do it to be engaged in the market, to have some fun, to, you know, everyone likes the lucre of easy money. But to be honest, the serious money is all in good businesses. I would say more than long-term, good businesses. You know, and good businesses generally take time to mature. So there might be years of underperformance of that business, but you have a strategy, you have a thought process, so you should stick with that.
Do you ever go by your instinct, even if all the conventional indicators say that probably this business might not do well?
I mean, I do, because that is the art of good value investing, to be a contrarian. So a lot of the picks when we bought them have not met with popularity in the market. So that's part of the game. I mean, if you are scared to be a contrarian, you're probably not going to be a good value investor.
Okay. And what's your philosophy about money?
I think it's a very evolved philosophy over time. I think... And I've learned this from the greats, whether it's Warren Buffett, R.K. Damani, whatever, that you need to, I think we've all been blessed. We've all had more money than we could profitably use in a lifetime. But the way we think about it is money keeps a score. Money allows us to keep score in the market. And beyond that, our habits don't change because we made more money. We still live in the same neighborhoods we live in, dress the same way, eat the same way, you know, travel in a particular way. Maybe instead of economy, travel business class now. But it doesn't change us. You know, we have to view ourselves now as trustees of this wealth, you know, that we are doing this. And after we finish compounding the wealth, we'll give it back to society. So I think money is a great way. Financial freedom is great. You know, I think the thing I value the most for my life is the financial freedom that the markets have bought me. But at the end of the day, I truly believe that everyone who's made money the hard way by compounding the money and by remaining invested for a period of 30 years ultimately is a trustee of that wealth. You know, it is for the greater good.
You mentioned that, you know, you were lucky early on to be with some of the big names in the market when you had just started off. So what were the key learnings there?
I mean, there are so many. I was very fortunate to be able to, the Indian parts, I was able to look at them and meet them almost on a daily basis. So one was just by observing what they did. Second was by reading about the great investors, the Soros, the Buffetts, the Templetons of the world, what they did out there. So I kind of was very lucky. I had in one way a ringside view of what was going on. And then I also had depth by reading about what global investors were doing. And to give you an example of one guy who I overseas were found very helpful was a guy called Carlos Slim. He's maybe the third or fourth richest guy in the world today. And he made his fortune in Mexico. And he had a very simple philosophy. He said that, I'm always bullish on Mexico. And he was an immigrant actually in Mexico, but he's still over. So when the Mexican market was selling off in the 60s and 70s, there was a currency depreciation, there was an economic crisis. He always kept buying equity in Mexico. And as a result, he built up some stakes in some very serious companies. And I remember reading his biography and being enthralled by it. And when India went through a similar crisis, we remember in the 90s, we defaulted on our debt almost to the IMF. We went through various crises of governments leaving and things. I realized and learned from the masters even in India that you remain bullish in India, that countries don't go bankrupt, that businesses will find a way out. And the worse it gets, the more chances that economic reform will have to happen in a democracy. So, you know, by being luckily having a ringside view and also being able to impart by reading, I think I could develop my own set of principles which have held me in good stead.
So what was your experience during the technology rally in the late 90s and early 2000s, both on the way up and down?
Well, you know what Steve Jobs says always, that you know, you need to connect the dots in your life. You don't know what decision helps you where. So for me, that's a perfect example. I used to work in the technology industry in California in my first innings of my life, for example, I would say in the late, early 80s. And then I came back to India. At that time, India had no technology base at all. But then companies like CMC, Infosys, Wipro went public and you could participate in the shares. And I was one of the few people who understood the value of those business franchises. You know, we didn't necessarily have land, machine, people walked at 5 o'clock, but realized the intellectual property that these companies were capable of creating. So I managed to latch onto that. So my life connected. I mean, though I worked in a different area first, because of my learnings of the technology industry at that point, of the value of intellectual property, algorithms, soft power, as we call it, I realized the value of the franchise that were exploding in India. So we participated in the boom to a large extent with the technology shares leading up to 2000. Then, of course, we also realized that, you know, trees don't go to the sky, that, you know, you need to value things in certain perspective, even though they're in tech industry, whatever. Market really got swayed at the other end with the technology businesses. So at some point we figured out that these were ready for, ripe for a crash. So you kind of meld the two together, intuitive understanding of the industry, intuitive understanding of the markets. I think that was the maturity after 2000. We came out of that. We lost some money, but we came out basically richer than we were when we entered it. So those are the great learnings. And I think that has taught me for the future bull markets that, you know, you need to, when you need to get out of assets, when a bull market gets over, you know, all those issues that sometimes, you know, are very painful lessons for investors.
So how did you use those learnings during the crash of 2008?
Well, the way to understand it, Santosh, is you need to, I've witnessed maybe 5 bull markets in my life, you know, starting with the 92, 88, which I didn't participate at all, 92, 2000, 2003, 2008, whatever. So many bull markets have taken place in the 30 years I've been in the market. And the way you value yourself are two ways. You know, first, every bull market must make you more richer and more powerful, okay, in terms of understanding the market. So am I better off than I was in 92? Yes. I'm better off than in 2000? Yes. I'm better off in 2003? Yes. That's, you know, the first lesson that you do. Second, every investor, proprietary investor, need to ask them a very simple question, that am I in the process of doubling my money every 3 years? Sometimes I'll do it in 2 years, sometimes I'll take 5 years. You know, that happens. But on a smoothened average basis, you should be able to double your money every 3 years, particularly if you're starting from a low base. And if you're doing that, you're on the right track. If you're not doing that, better change your track, okay? Because the way to financial freedom, as I told you, is to double your money 10 times in your financial career. Almost any amount of money you start with will become a very serious amount of money at the end of 30 years, right? So you need to follow that. So once I understood those principles of compounding, and Mr. Chandrakant Sampath had a lot to explain to me, he was one of the legendary value investors in India of compounding at that time. I mean, though I was an MBA, he taught me about compounding. And, you know, taking those building blocks, and I try to measure myself. I don't really care if a particular stock does well or badly, but on aggregate, my portfolio should be doubling every 3 years, which is about 24-25% compounded returns. And if it does that, I'm pretty happy. So once I understood that, I didn't panic if someone told me a stock's tripled in 3 months. I don't really care. I want my portfolio to double every 3 years. If I do that, I know what the journey leads me to. I know where it goes. So I think each bull market, hopefully, we've learned something. And in the next bull market, we've implemented those lessons and become stronger. But the underlying lesson in all of this is buy great businesses and compound your money, double your money every 3 years. If you do these two things right, I think you're well ahead in the game.
So what is your definition of a great business?
You know, a great business would be one that has some pricing power. That would be the most important thing. It needs to have some pricing power. If they can't raise prices, or they have to pray to God before they raise the prices, it's not a great business. It's a moat that not many people can get into that business very easily. And it must have good management who sees a great external opportunity available. I mean, tech was a great external opportunity. You know, the world wanted tech and India offered tech. Great. So, and occasionally you have to marry that with market cap. The market should be so cheap for that stock that you see something beyond that. So you kind of marry all these things together, you find what I call a great business.
What are some of the common misconceptions that people have about the market?
Oh, there are many, but I think the most common one is, of course, that, you need to, it's a get-rich-quick scheme. I think that is perhaps a misnomer because you need to, like I told you, compound your money, which is something, if you're putting in fixed deposits, you're getting 8% fixed deposit, you're paying 30% tax on that. You're not being able to grow rich. Whereas if you buy an investment, still, I think a year back, there was tax-free long-term capital gains, tax-free dividends. Now the government is taxing us 10% long-term capital gains. And so people ask me, maybe that opportunity is closed. And I say no. And the reason I say no is because tax is only done on once you sell the shares. So you find a business that you keep for 8, 10 years, there's no tax. So it goes for you tax-free. So try and find business that can last 6 years, 8 years. So there's no tax consequences for you on a year-to-year basis. So that opportunity is still there. I mean, this country is a young country. It has not valued equities as an asset class. It has valued gold. It has valued real estate. But I think increasingly they're getting warm to equities. When you're young in India, you need to be thinking not of the next 2 years, the next vacation or the next holiday, but financial freedom. And if you're doing that, I think equity is a good place to start.
So when you started, information was very scarce. And today there seems to be too much of it. So how does that help or harm an investor in his decision-making process?
I'm of the view that, it was scarce and sometimes you could leverage that information or insight to money. Now it's the same, you can still leverage it. I think it comes down to some insights in life. You need to have been well-read, well-educated, well-thought, need to spend time thinking, reading a balance sheet and, a lot of the time really should be spent in just thinking, and which people don't do. They like a busy life. You're from 8 to 5, constant appointments, no free time, no time to read. And that's not a good thing to be an investor. I mean, it might be a good thing to do if you're a salesperson or if you're an engineer. But for an investor, you need free time to think. How will the world look 10 years from now? Who will prosper? Who will, be in a depression? Which are the businesses that will do well? So my feeling is that if you spend the time thinking and reading, you're probably way ahead. This is, Warren Buffett has said, it's not a high IQ business. Suppose your IQ of 120 versus IQ of 90, give the 30 points to someone else. You don't need such a high IQ for this business. But what you do, and as he always said, that this business is simple, but it's not easy. And the hard work you need to put in terms of reading and thinking, and if that's not your strength, then maybe value investing is not for you.
This is a Money Control Podcast special in conversation with Ramesh Damani.
Well, now you're on the board of DMart. So that would have given you the chance to see how a company is run and decisions are taken. That must be very different from the way you used to view companies purely as an investment opportunity. So what are some of the learnings there?
Yeah, the management of DMart spoils me. I mean, of course, I'm on the board and I have, oversight of the board. But we have such a great management team that delivers year after year. So I know from experiences companies don't do that. So I'm sometimes also in awe of my own management team of how brilliantly they've built the business and how they deliver quarter after quarter. So, when you see greatness, you recognize it.
Well, thank you so much for those insights. It was a pleasure talking to you, Mr. Damani.
Always a pleasure, Santosh. Thank you so much.
This has been a Money Control presentation.